It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, hello, America. Hello, you are tuned in to the Second Amendment Radio Show. We'd like to nip that down just a bit. We call it 2A Radio. The website, as is always, is 2aradio.com if you want to go there and check it out. Of course, all of the archives from the inception of the show about 2 years ago are up. We're going to talk a little bit about loaded open carry movements, and particularly the one in California, and it's got a bit of an unexpected and an unwitting ally. Now, in the state of California, back in 1968, if memory serves correct, the Black Panthers were a little upset about some political-related ongoings in the state capitol. So they loaded up some guns, and they marched on the capitol. Well, the lawmakers didn't like that much. The very next day, they passed legislation through both state houses and signed by then-Governor Ronald Reagan, of all people, that says now in the state of California, you cannot carry a loaded gun. Okay, you can have ammunition with you, ammunition on you, but it cannot be in the actual gun. So because of this, there's been a bit of an open carry movement in California. If you want to get licensed to carry a loaded gun, you can get a license to carry a gun exposed. However, there are some parameters. I think the county has to have less than, whatever it is, 300,000 people in it. So you couldn't get one of these permits in L.A. County or San Diego County or, you know, up in San Francisco area. And it's the exact same process to get a concealed weapons permit in the state. It's a mother may I permission asking venture. Well, here's a quote. Thus, even if this court were to find that an absolute ban on carrying firearms in public was unconstitutional, and that self-defense exception contained in section 12031 was insufficient to protect that right, there's absolutely no support for plaintiff's argument that section 12050 and defendant's policies must therefore be held unconstitutional. Now, what am I talking about? I'm talking about a case called Richards v. Pareto. It's a reply to an opposition for motion for summary judgment. It was put out just last Friday, March 4th, 2011. As the Pareto versus San Diego case, the plaintiff seeks to turn California into a shall issue state for license to carry a firearm concealed upon one's person. So a shall issue for CCWs. Now, first, a little background and information on why this is significant for advocates of the right to openly carry a loaded firearm for the purposes of self-defense. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the Second Amendment was the codification of a pre-existing right of the individual to self-defense. And, as such, we have the right to openly carry a weapon in public, handguns being the favorite of the court. Last June, the High Court issued a decision applying that right to all states and local governments, including California and L.A. Since the 2008 Heller decision, the Ninth Circuit Federal Court has decided two cases upholding the right to openly carry a loaded gun in public and rejecting the argument that one has a right to carry a loaded gun concealed. In the first decision, a convicted felon and gang member was convicted for carrying a loaded handgun concealed upon his person. He claimed that the Heller decision was meaningless dicta The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals disagreed and explicitly held that the crucial paragraph of Heller, which upheld the right to openly carry a loaded firearm, but not a loaded firearm concealed upon one's person, is not meaningless dicta. It's the law. So in the Peruta case, the attorneys for the defendant, who would be Sheriff Gore, made all manners of claims, including the absurd claim that the Second Amendment should not apply to San Diego because of its proximity to the border of Mexico. Fortunately, the sheriff also argued that because we have the right to openly carry a firearm in public, the judge should rule against the plaintiff. She did. The chief federal judge for the Southern District of California explicitly stated in her decision that we have the right to openly carry a loaded firearm in public. She went on to say she could not rule on the constitutionality of California Penal Code 12031, requiring one to keep his firearm unloaded until one was in grave danger, because neither party in the suit challenged that statute. That is judge speech for, please challenge the constitutionality of this law. That was in December. This is March. Nobody's taken the judge up on her invitation thus far. Which brings us back to the opening paragraph. By phrasing the paragraph the way that they did, the lawyers for Sheriff Pareto have unwittingly stated that the case is sufficient for the judge to rule on the constitutionality of the California statute, which requires us to keep our firearm unloaded in most public areas. Whether he does so, and whether he will like anybody's guess, and whether he will rule is anybody's guess. A spot check of his case does not indicate whether he is a liberal lefty or a right-wing conservative. Doesn't really matter. He's a judge sitting there. He shouldn't have to worry about political ideology. For example, he ruled against defendants who claimed they were racially profiled, but stopped a logging project because it might damage the ecology. This would tend to indicate that the lawyer who represented the better legal case prevails, regardless of the underlying merits of the case or the constitutional question. If this is true, then one should sympathize with Judge Morrison C. England Jr. Neither party's done a very good job presenting their side of the case. So, please, in Southern California, challenge on your own belief because you are affected negatively by California Penal Code 12031. Please, tack on to this case. Have your attorney write a brief challenging the constitutionality of California Penal Code 12031, which says you can't carry a loaded gun. Now, it's been overruled in the federal court, but they have to rule it unconstitutional, which is stupid. It's already been ruled on. It's been ruled on higher than that at the Ninth Circuit. But yet somebody has to specifically rule CPC 12031 unconstitutional. Stay tuned. More to come after the break. You're tuned in live right here with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back from the break. You know, scumbag, lowlife, derelict mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, has formed the Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which is essentially mayors getting behind me for my own personal crusade to disarm America. That's essentially what it is. They've even put together a roving truck that drives around the country now, just started, on this coast-to-coast tour, going to cities talking about guns and gun violence. Of course, only giving the information that the anti-gunners want to give out. Not the whole story, because the whole story is counterproductive to them. People would otherwise be more interested in buying guns. Well, here's an open letter to Michael Bloomberg from Rabbi David Bendori, the Rabbinic Director for Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. Let me read this to you. Dear Mayor Bloomberg, this was posted on the JFPO website. I am an Orthodox rabbi who lives in New Jersey but works in New York City. Approximately half of my waking life is under your laws and jurisdiction. Like everyone who lives or works in New York City, I have the right, even the obligation, to confront some of your policies regarding your so-called gun control. Why do I place the phrase gun control in quotes? Because the innocuous sounding phrase, this expression that sounds like common sense, is in reality a dangerous bit of semantic trickery. Gun control actually and historically means letting government, whether benign or ruthlessly evil, disarm certain sectors of society and allow others to remain armed. It means letting the government know where every gun owner lives and the number and types of firearms that he or she owns. It means putting the authority to decide who has the right to defend himself or herself with a firearm into the hands of a government bureaucrat. The honest definition of gun control is actually victim disarmament, because the person with the gun will always control the person without the gun. Without the personal firearm as an equalizer, the stronger will always control the weaker. Mr. Bloomberg, our Jewish tradition tells us that righteous self-defense is not only permissible, but an obligation. Quote, if a murderer comes to you, strike him down first. That is the Talmud Sanhedrin 72a. In your own New York City, handguns are illegal for all practical purposes, yet the murderers, drug dealers, gangs, and other criminal predators in your city manage to acquire them nonetheless. How do you expect civilians to defend themselves against those who would harm them if we cannot use the most practical tool at our disposal, the handgun? You tell us to dial 911 and then wait 10 minutes or more for police to rescue us, right? Remember the dial 911 and die? Continuing. It deeply troubles me that I, along with millions of others who live and work in your city, are on your disarmed list. Mr. Mayor, it is not only immoral, it goes against the fundamental precepts of Judaism that you and I both honor. Of course, Bloomberg is Jewish too. The Torah teaches, quote, do not stand idly by the blood of your neighbor, Leviticus 19:16, which Rashi explains means that one who is able to help another escape harm and fails to do so is held culpable in the heavenly court for the harm he failed to prevent. You, Mr. Mayor, by disarming your citizens, place them in harm's way every day. Jews are commanded by God to value all human life. How can you, a religiously committed Jew, so you truly value human life? Every second you stand as mayor, you advocate laws that strip millions and millions of people in your city completely defenseless in the face of the criminal predators who roam your streets. Mr. Mayor, your citizens' disarmament is an act of hypocrisy. Unlike nearly all the rest of us, everywhere you go, you are surrounded by official armed guards, police escorts, and your highly trained personal private bodyguards. Mr. Mayor, is your life worth more than the lives of your fellow citizens? Are we mere subjects in your eye? As Jews, Mr. Mayor, we believe that all life is precious, not only the lives of our leaders. Have you ever in your time as mayor walked the streets of New York City alone and unarmed? I am nearly certain that you have to answer no to this question. Therefore, I must further ask you, how, in clear conscience, do you require the rest of us to do so? Would you unwillingly live under this prejudicial burden? Can you recognize and admit the arrogant hypocrisy this attitude displays? My own bit in here. Of course, they say there's two laws. A law for the rich and powerful, and then laws for everybody else. So, of course, Bloomberg, before he was mayor, I'm sure all of his bodyguards had concealed weapons permits. to be able to carry whatever kind of guns they wanted to protect him, because he could pay off anybody he needed to for that. Continuing. Additionally, you are no doubt aware that the Jewish people have been at the wrong end of the gun barrel for far too long. America is one of the few countries in the world where Jews are entitled to embrace firearms as the most practical means of our own self-defense. And you would strip us of the right to defend ourselves? With all due respect, Mr. Mayor, this is shameful. Mayor Bloomberg, have you studied Jewish history? Are you aware that the Nazis disarmed Jews prior to Kristallnacht? And that those same Nazi gun laws are the foundation of the U.S. Gun Control Act of 1968? Are you aware that Senator Thomas Dodd asked the Library of Congress to translate the Nazi gun control laws into English for him, and that he incorporated language from these laws into the Gun Control Act of 1968 that he authored? How can it be that you, a Jew, are enforcing Nazi-inspired laws? Tyranny, like Lenin, Hitler, Stalin, and Mao, pioneered the blood trail of gun control in the 20th century. Why do you so thoughtlessly, in effect, mimic the insidious actions of these monsters? This apparent elitism is your part, on your part, makes your recent public publicity stunts in Arizona even more cynical. You sent NYPD agents all the way across the country to purchase guns, but you can't deploy enough police to protect our own city residents. And if you expose your city residents via such a manpower diversion, how do you justify denying the residents of the right to protect themselves with a firearm? Mr. Mayor, do you need a rabbi to tell you that your actions are wrong and immoral? The nation's Bill of Rights is a public trust. You are a public servant. You swore an oath to uphold the Constitution. As you blatantly disregard the Second Amendment, the actual guardian of all the rest of the Bill of Rights, I must ask you, did you knowingly lie when you took your oath of office? Sincerely, Rabbi David Bendery, Rabbinic Director Jews for the Preservation of Firearm Ownership. Very, very well-written letter. And, of course, he played to the religious beliefs of Mayor Bloomberg, scumbag, anti-gun, hack, got more money than sense, and is using that money to privately fund his own anti-gun agenda. Of course, this is the only mayor in America that can sit down with any congressional group of his choice, of his own liking, at whim. Other mayors don't get that option. How does he? He takes some of his billions of dollars, cuts a check to the right guy, and goes and speaks on behalf of anti-American gun control, taken from the Nazi papers. Stay tuned, guys. There's plenty more to come right after this upcoming break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you are tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back from the break. Now, of course, we've been talking about scumbag, hypocrite, just deplorable excuse for an American, Mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg. Scumbag. He's got this rolling billboard going across the country, stating 34 Americans are murdered every day by a gun. Well, okay. He's going through Milwaukee. Well, gun rights advocates are driving a rolling billboard to downtown Milwaukee. They drove through this last Thursday. They're going through today to counter billionaire Michael Bloomberg, Mayor of New York City's campaign of fear against the Badger State gun owners, as they say. Bloomberg is, of course, the founder and backer of Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which has its own billboard truck cruising around the country with the message that 34 Americans are murdered by guns every day. Well, the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms has a truck, too. What's its message? Guns save lives. The truck and gun rights supporters, including Nick Clark of Wisconsin Carry Incorporated, plan to be at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Water Street over the noon hour today. Thursday. The Citizens' Right for the to Keep and Bear Arms says as many as 6,800 Americans use guns to defend themselves or stop a criminal attack every day. Quote, no mayor, regardless of how wealthy he is, should dictate to Congress or the people of Wisconsin the terms of their civil rights, says the group's chairman, Alan M. Gottlieb. Michael Bloomberg is spreading hysteria about gun rights. We're spreading the truth. Five Wisconsin mayors, including Tom Barrett of Milwaukee, are members of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. The group's rolling billboard also sends viewers to www.fixgunchecks.org, an online petition calling for adding names of people who are barred from having firearms to a background database and requiring background checks for all gun purchases. There's already a database. It's called the Instant Check System. It's the Brady Check System. You fools. Interesting that Alan Gottlieb said something about they shouldn't be dictating the terms of civil rights. Their rights. Do you guys understand this whole thing with the whole 14th Amendment? I haven't hit it in some time. Before the 14th Amendment, everybody just had rights. After the 14th Amendment, the newly minted citizens who, for purposes of the 14th Amendment, were freed black slaves, had civil rights. Different than just rights. Now everybody claims civil rights, which is not good. Because the 14th Amendment doesn't have the same protection of rights that the original class of citizenship does. There are substantive due process rights to the original class of citizen. There's merely procedural due process rights for 14th Amendment citizens, meaning that the government itself can change the laws whether or not you have the right. It's no longer a right. 14th Amendment citizens don't really have any rights. What they have are privileges that can be granted or taken away by one government authority or another. So, people need to understand that. I've done shows on this before. Go back and listen to them. I've even sat in with Dave Champion a couple times on the Dave Champion Show. Go to DaveChampionShow.com and look up those. We've done a couple shows on the 14th Amendment. Let's talk again. We spoke yesterday about how government is first and foremost commanded by the Constitution to protect our freedoms and liberties first. Everything else comes far down the road. Well, a motorist has been illegally detained in Florida, many of them, in fact, at their toll booths for using large bills. A guy by the name of Joel Chandler, he just paid his $1 toll on the Polk Parkway with a $100 bill. He's not allowed to leave unless he provides personal information to the toll taker. The toll taker tells Chandler this is what happens when they get large bills. She says this is what they have to do. That's what they're commanded to do, the toll handlers, toll takers. Chandler says to the toll taker, so am I being detained? Her answer, she says, yes, sir. It's a policy in the Florida Turnpike Authority instituted for people who pay with $20, $50, and $100 bills. After it happened once, Chandler kept testing the system and taped his encounters as he went through the toll booths. One time a toll taker told him she wouldn't give him his change unless he gave her the information. Chandler replied, so I'm being detained? He asked why he was being detained but never got an answer. Chandler said this is a serious criminal offense to detain someone without proper legal authority. He says that this is exactly what the department is doing. When Chandler called and emailed the Florida Department of Transportation to complain about the policy, he was told there is no policy to detain people who give large bills. He said that made him even more concerned because that meant there were individual rogue toll takers detaining people. The practice continued at toll booth after toll booth and if someone refused to provide the information, they were threatened with arrest. As in, you're paying with something 20 or larger, you give me all your personal information, or you're under arrest. One toll taker told Chandler's brother Robert, I could call Florida Highway Patrol. Would you like me to do that, sir? Robert Chandler asked why she would call the Florida Highway Patrol when he was being illegally detained, and the toll taker said he could come up with another form of, he could come up with another form of tender, meaning if you give me a smaller bill, we don't have to worry about this. Well, Chandler continued to complain, and on July 21st at 7:19 p.m., he received an email from the Assistant General Counsel of FDOT, saying essentially that the department didn't know what he was talking about, and they didn't have sufficient information to investigate. However, earlier in the same day, there were a flurry of emails going back and forth in the department saying, shut the program down, temporarily suspend it, and who should call Chandler, and what they should say. So, of course, the general counsel, Florida Department of Transportation, lied. According to Chandler, not only was the DOT not being truthful about the policy existing, but he also says that they made a concerted effort to cover it up. All of those emails back and forth, guess what? Public information. One reason the department might not have wanted the public to know about the program is because of whom was being detained. Chandler said he thinks it's clear from their own documents, there was a lot of racial profiling going on. When you look at the documents from the Florida Department of Transportation, you see there was a policy change about detaining people who gave a $20 bill. The department decided to leave it up to the discretion of the toll takers to decide who was suspicious. If they're taking down your information, it's going somewhere. Find that information and arrest these people. The courts have ruled that it is unconstitutional, because it allows the preference and prejudice of an individual to make the decision. Chandler says 87% of the time toll takers took the time to fill out the form as to why they stopped someone, it was a racial description like young black male or young black male, young Hispanic male. Although FDOT refused to comment because the department expects to be sued, internal email justifying the program because of its counterfeit bills. However, in a 2.5 year period, the DOT got $16,000 in counterfeit bills, while at the same time it collected close to $2 billion in tolls. The department also spent $32,000 on forms used to catch the $16,000 in funny money. This is the way it goes, guys. Stay tuned. More to come after the break. I'm Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on! I know that you are wrong if this is
And welcome back. You know, I got a comment on this story we did just finish up last segment with Florida Department of Transportation. Toll workers not allowing people to pass if they pay with a 20, 50, or 100 because they're afraid they might be a counterfeit. So they detain the people and fill out a form who these people are, all their information. Absolutely illegal. Absolutely illegal. You know, you Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure? Well, that's detainment. That's seizure. Where do you get this money? It says for all debts, public and private. And they want to detain you just in case that bill comes back counterfeit. How are they going to know that bill was the one that came from you? Do they take that bill and staple it to a form? If all you have is a 20, and then they want your personal information for paying in cash, I don't think so. If I were in those shoes, I would look the toll taker in the eye and say, you are illegally attempting to detain me. Give me my change and let me go. Or give me my initial payment back in full and allow me to go without paying. If you fail to do either of the two, I will place you under arrest for robbery because you're forcing me to give you money. You'll be placed under arrest for a felony. If nothing else, it might drop down to larceny from a person, but you are being arrested by me immediately if you don't either give me my correct change right now in full or return my money and send me on my way without paying the toll, period. And then from there, if I got any argument, any lip whatsoever, I would call Highway Patrol and place this person under arrest. It's exactly what I would do. I challenge anyone in Florida to do the same. Make those same threats and let them know these are not idle threats. This is the way things are. You, some toll-taking troll, are not going to dictate to me my rights and how you believe that you can violate them because your boss says so? No. Out of the state of Massachusetts, very anti-gun state, even though Smith & Wesson happens to be, they make their home in Massachusetts, Springfield. Well, a UMass law student has been charged with possession of an AK-47. A first-year UMass Dartmouth law student has been suspended after police arrested him this week on charges of illegally possessing firearms, including an AK-47, in his Dartmouth apartment. Not even on campus, in his apartment. John E. Cassidy, 26, was arraigned, Thursday. I think it was last Thursday. And this is being held at the Bristol County House of Correction for a dangerousness hearing, which is supposed to be this last Monday. I haven't gotten any updates on that. In New Bedford District Court, he is charged with several counts of firearms offenses that include illegal possession of a large capacity weapon. What's a large capacity weapon? What? Police say Cassidy was also a fugitive from Texas, where he had an active arrest warrant for possession of explosive components. Armed with a search warrant Wednesday, Dartmouth police seized the AK-47, a loaded 9mm handgun, 3 magazines, one of them loaded, and almost 200 rounds of assorted ammunition from Cassidy's apartment at the Ledgewood Commons in North Dartmouth, according to court records. Police arrested Cassidy in the parking lot of the UMass Dartmouth Law School on Fonts Corner Road just minutes after he left a class, according to prosecutors. Dartmouth Police Chief Timothy M. Lee said campus police at UMass Dartmouth received anonymous tips Tuesday notifying them that Cassidy had violent tendencies, possessed guns, and that he had assaulted his roommate, also a law student. Police said the roommate fled to Worcester because he was scared. He returned to Dartmouth on Wednesday, spoke with police, and filed a restraining order against Cassidy, authorities said. So we've got this little wussy roommate girly boy who doesn't like his roommate, and his roommate owns guns. The guns are constitutionally protected.
Read Heller versus District of Columbia. Read McDonald v. Chicago. The roommate who had been living with Cassidy since December said Cassidy had recently struck him, thrown him over a table, and thrown a metal chair at him. Cassidy will be arraigned later at a later date on the assault charge. Okay, that's actually battery, not assault, by the name of the charge. But why did the guy who's arrested, Cassidy, why did he punch the guy, throw him over a table, and throw a metal chair at him? Why? That's my question. Did the jackass roommate deserve to get punched and pitched over a table and have a chair thrown at him? I have to tell you, I know a lot of people who have deserved getting punched and thrown over a table. In fact, I have punched and thrown people over a table. I had a coworker about, we're probably dating ourselves 12 years now, 11, 12 years ago, come and start bump chesting me and threatening me. To which I grabbed him by the lapel of his jacket and threw him across the secretary's desk in our department. And she had like the long secretary's piece and then her desk. He went sailing over towards this desk and cleared everything off of it as his fat ass went sailing away from me after bump chesting me. At which point I went after him to grab him and punch him right in the face. Which is where other co-workers got between us. Hold on. Don't hit him. So, was this a similar situation? We don't know. Now all of a sudden, this other kid is a victim. Maybe he deserved to get punched and tossed across the table. I know somebody I knew deserved to get punched and tossed across the table. That's exactly what I gave him. While Dartmouth police said Cassidy was a violent individual who was well-known to Texas authorities, defense lawyer Stuart H. Grimes noted Cassidy had cooperated with police this week. Grimes said Cassidy's roommate started the fight between them, and Cassidy has not threatened anyone with a firearm. Meanwhile, Cassidy was also arraigned Wednesday on the fugitive charge. In January 2010, authorities in Montgomery County, Texas, accused him of torching the car of a man who had robbed him at gunpoint during a drug deal gone bad, according to court documents. Pretty interesting. Montgomery County Sheriff deputies who arrested Cassidy said he was in possession of a gasoline-soaked rag and other items purported to be used for incendiary device. Well, that's kind of a stretch. While the case was pending, Cassidy moved to Massachusetts in August to attend law school. In all my years, I've never heard of anyone fleeing from one location to get a law degree in another, says Lee. Cassidy arrived in Massachusetts with everything he owned, including his 9mm handgun and the AK-47, which he purchased legally in Texas. Quote, it's a complete difference of culture in Texas. Everybody there is armed to the teeth, says Grimes, adding that Cassidy was applying for the necessary gun licenses in Massachusetts when police arrested him. So they knew he had guns. He'd been applying for the licenses. This is a totally illegal arrest. First of all, the Supreme Court decisions in Heller and McDonald both say you can keep guns. They've also said if you obtain a gun in one place legally where you reside and then move to another place and you go through their process, you're immune until you hear back from the process. These arrests are absolutely illegal. Grimes said Cassidy did not leave Texas to avoid his charges there. Authorities in Montgomery County have indicated their plans to extradite him to Texas. A fugitive warrant was lodged in October after a bail bondsman learned Cassidy had moved without notifying authorities. Was he commanded to notify authorities? I wouldn't have. I'd just go and do what I'm doing too. Court documents indicate the Montgomery County authorities seized marijuana, prescription medication, steroids, flashbang grenades, and rifles from Cassidy's Texas residence. Okay. Marijuana? Not good. Prescription medications, were they in his name or not? Flashbang grenades are not illegal? Grimes said those items actually belonged to an active duty Army soldier who was living with Cassidy. Guys, I'm not really sure what to make of all this. All I know is the law is on this guy Cassidy's side. And it sounds as though his rights are being ignored, violated, and trampled on with all. He might be a good guy, he might be a scumbag. I don't know. All I know is the cops seized and arrested him illegally.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2WayRadio.com.